Welcome back to the Sports Ticket. Joined now by Seren Petro, 810 WHB in Kansas City, host of the program Monday through Fridays from 2 to 6 p.m. Seren, how's your heart doing right now? I ask you this because I love sports, and what we've experienced with KU, K-State on Saturday, K-State women's players scored 61 on Sunday, the NFL playoff games, of course, the unbelievable game between the Bills and Chiefs we'll talk about, and then last night, KU, Texas Tech goes double overtime. I mean, man, you got to check that ticker and make sure it's strong, right?
Yeah, staring down the barrel of a KU Kentucky game this weekend, followed up by the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's too much going on. There's just too much to handle.
I'm happy to handle all this because, of course, with COVID, there for a while we didn't have anything, and now we have too much. And I'd rather have too much than nothing at all. My friend, thanks for the time as always. I wanted you on the show because, you know, I'm watching this game Sunday night, and after the game's over, I know the easy thing to do is say that's the best game ever played in NFL history, or that's the best playoff game, and I don't like to have the knee-jerk reaction. I like to think about it, and I thought about it for a while, and I'm having a hard time coming up with a game that was more complete from beginning to finish, where there wasn't anything marred, there weren't controversies with officials, they did not throw their flags, there was only four flags in the game, so it allowed the players to play, the quarterbacks are magnificent, players made plays, and there were no turnovers in the game. Is that the best NFL game or playoff game you've ever witnessed?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we've become conditioned because for so long it was just every game that was played every week was immediately dubbed the greatest game ever. And with all the marketing that goes on around sports and with television and everything, you know, the penchant to overhype things is just there. And so I think now the pendulum's almost swung all the way back that we just assume that every game isn't, right? But something is. And so I would, you know, what we did yesterday, we talked about, like, okay, if not this one, then what?
Uh-huh.
And we picked apart the other games compared to this game. And for all the reasons you stated, these are two really well-coached teams that both played at a high level. You know, if you wanted to ding it a little bit, I think that where I would find a place to ding it is to say, well, there were times that there just wasn't great defense. Now, give credit to both quarterbacks. They exploited it, right? A lot of times you'll see Jimmy Garoppolo just overthrow a guy when he gets wide open. These guys didn't miss. And so, you know, if you wanted to try to say, well, greatest offensive performance, greatest quarterback duel, and try to say, you know, well, there weren't enough stops for my liking, all right, I'd listen to that. And I'd listen to whatever game you'd nominate against it and listen to you try to explain to me why it was better. But for a divisional playoff game that was deemed really by most people the AFC Championship game. Now, I think the greatness of this game may be determined by how far the Chiefs go. If the Chiefs go on to win the Super Bowl, then I think this game will carry even more weight because it will look like, wow, those were the two best teams. You know, if the Chiefs peter out and lose in a mistake-prone game against the Bengals, then it'll be more like it'll fall into a category. One of the games I nominated was Cardinals-Packers back in 2009, where it was Kurt Warner against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And it was 51-45, won in overtime. You know, that's one of the games that I remember just being in awe of, at least the quarterback play. So, yeah, I get it. We want to check ourselves from calling everything great, but what's wrong with this one? There's very, very little to pick apart on this one for sure.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I was talking about this earlier. That those that are really diehard fans eventually, hopefully, get rewarded. And there's always the bandwagon fans. You know who they are. The ones jumped off the wagon when the Chiefs were 3-4. Oh, this team's not good enough to make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, back in the day, they were 2-14 and nobody, you know, you could say you're a Chiefs fan. I know I still watched them, was hoping they would win, even though it didn't help them. It would hurt them in the draft and this and that. But Royals fans eventually were rewarded for being a diehard fan. I think it makes it even sweeter than the ones that jump on the wagon. The Chiefs are very similar to that from the standpoint of all the playoff disappointment. But yet at the same time, I can't help but think it's really nice to be on this side of things, because how many times did the Chiefs have Heartbreak Hotel, whether it was Elway and the Broncos back in the day, or it was in the playoffs with Lynn Elliott or Tony Gonzalez being held, or the wrong quarterback playing in a playoff game or blowing a big lead against the Indianapolis Colts? We can go on with all the disappointment the Chiefs have had. But at the same time, I had to take a step back after that great game Sunday night and say to myself, Seren, how would I have felt if that were the Chiefs that allowed the Bills to go 44 yards in 13 seconds when you thought you had the game won? And I'm just very thankful that 15's on our side.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you're right. And listen, I think two things jump out at me from what you just said there is, one, this needs to be savored. The journey needs to be savored.
Yes.
I took calls. The Chiefs beat the Steelers 42-21, and two of my first three calls were negative about the team.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, they called it, there are too many silly penalties. They had four penalties for 25 yards. The coverage – was the, you know, they're too handsy in the coverage. You know, you get more interceptions if you're seeing the quarterback. And I said, you know, they just won 42-21 in the opening round of the playoffs. They had a quarterback throw for 400 yards and five touchdowns, and you called the bitch. I mean, yeah. That's really what I'm listening to right here. Like, are you? Did you just become a Chiefs fan last year? Because I don't want to hear about how many years you had season tickets. Because if you did, you would have enjoyed. Yesterday was a masterpiece. You know, you didn't sweat for a second the game. You know, once we got to the 2 minute mark of the second quarter, like there's nothing to complain about on this game. I think people need to enjoy the journey. You know, this is part of the journey. It's not going to end with 18 championships. For Patrick Mahomes, it's going to end with more than one, I believe, and I think several. How many more beyond that? I don't know, but the journey is going to be great. And so don't waste your time being a negative sourpuss, complaining about all the minute details along the way, and miss what is a fantastic ride. The other thing is, it puts into perspective all the complaining we did. Like, you know, you talked about, well, if Tony Gonzalez is, you know, not on stepping on the back line, you know, when you have 15, you just come back the next play and you throw a different touchdown, right? We saw that. Clyde Edwards-Helaire dropped a ball that hit him in the hands and face. And what did Patrick Mahomes do? He reverse pivoted into the teeth of a blitz, had two guys in his face after Buffalo. That was the first time Buffalo had blitzed them in two games. Zero blitzes in game one, zero blitzes in that game to that point. The play would seem to be a perfect play call. Instead, it's a disaster. Mahomes just flicks it high into the air. Byron Pringle runs under it, touchdown. That's what happens. You don't have that, oh, my God, because the oh, my God plays that are disasters get made up for by oh, my God plays that are great plays when you have Patrick Mahomes. Which quarterback to start, right? The Rich Gannon, Elvis Gerbach?
Yeah.
It's not a question if 15's there. They both sit and watch 15. It's amazing how getting that decision right makes so many other things so easy.
Absolutely. Sir Petra, 810 WHB in Kansas City, host of the program's weekdays from 2 to 6, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. All right. I tell you what, people. There's some people don't believe me, but – I said this, I was watching the game. When the ball was kicked out of the end zone with 13 seconds left, I was extremely confident the Chiefs would get a field goal attempt. I thought it might be 55 or 60 yards, but I was very confident that the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, they were going to at least get a field goal try. I don't think I ever dreamt it would be 48, 49 yards to where Butker, that's pretty not a gimme because he missed a 50-yarder earlier. And I immediately thought back when I'm watching the game live, Seren, about the AFC title game when he had about 30 seconds left, went right down the field. And, in fact, the Chiefs left a little bit of time on the clock, kicked the field goal, could have taken one more shot at the end zone. That's how quickly Mahomes went down the field in his first year as a starter against Bill Belichick and the Patriots defense. And I also remember 24-0 and the Chiefs came back. A Chiefs fan, if you keep falling for this over and over, thinking your team is dead in the water, I was watching the Super Bowl last year and the Chiefs are getting rolled, and I still thought Mahomes and the Chiefs were going to make a comeback in the fourth quarter. Because I have faith in 15 and the Chiefs and what they're going to do. Did you feel the same way, or were you saying, you know what, this is just too much for even Patrick Mahomes to overcome?
You know, the initial disappointment of seeing the touchdown and only 13 seconds, it takes a little time to gather yourself and figure out what he can do. You know, they had a game where at the end of a half they had 31 seconds and one timeout, and a friend said to me, well, yeah, too bad. I said, what are you talking about? There was 32 seconds and one timeout in the AFC Championship game, and Patrick Mahomes in 2018, the end of 18, January of 19.
Yeah.
And Patrick Mahomes took the team down the field, got a field goal, tied it, sent it to overtime. Of course, they lost and didn't get the ball. But point is, 31 seconds and one timeout, I know, is a field goal. I've never seen 13 seconds and three timeouts turn into a field goal. So initially, it was pessimism, right? But to your point, when it went through the end zone, and I knew he was going to get the ball at the 25, I'm like, this is two flicks of the wrist. Like, this can be done.
Yep.
And at that point, I did have hope, and then you had a lot of optimism after the first pass was completed. And I think it's amazing, and I think it goes to speak to how many years did Andy Reid listen to critics say he couldn't manage the clock.
Uh-huh.
And this is one thing that I'm adamant about, and you and I have talked about it. Clock management is a product of the quarterback you have.
Yep.
Yeah, you can be good or bad, but there's a difference between Dak Prescott and Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is better at it. And one of the things he does is he is not afraid to grip it and rip it down the middle of the field for big chunks of yardage. Instead of being squirrely and taking dump-offs for 3 and 4 yards and trying to stop the clock, he will rip it down the field. Now, in this game, he had no choice and he had the timeouts. But that's what he does anyway, right? Even if it's 151, their problem is they get down the field too quick, and then they got to find a way to drain the clock when they get down there, or they score like they did with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
And you're like, should he have slid down at the one and tried to drain this clock? You know you've got the one guy that is not afraid to let it rip, right down the middle of the field, and the Bills really, you know, if you want to talk about the errors in the game, made the mistake of covering the sidelines like the Chiefs were out of timeouts and made it a lot easier for Patrick Mahomes to complete those two passes.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's so much criticism of the Bills in regards to they should have squibbed it, they should have kicked it high and short, they shouldn't have kicked it out of the end zone. And I say, as a coach, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. If he kicks a short one and Pringle returns it all the way to midfield and there's, you know, 4 or 5 seconds left and somehow the Chiefs get a touchdown on a Hail Mary, they're saying, why didn't they kick it out of the end zone? Or if there's a squib kick and the Chiefs immediately fall on it, there's 12 seconds at the 40, well, hello, there's field position there on a squib kick. So, or you squib it out of bounds. That's also possible. You know, if you squib it and mishit it, it goes out of bounds. So I can see the criticism of that, but I think what you just mentioned is the bigger thing that the Bills fans need to focus on is how soft it was. There was free releases for Kelce and Hill, and the two guys that you can't let beat you in that situation, the Bills absolutely let beat them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it flies in the face of what their overall strategy was and what really everyone's overall strategy has become against the Chiefs, and that's 4th and 1, 4th and 2, 4th and 3, those are automatic go-for-its, right? Even in your own end, we saw that 4th and 1 in their own territory, Buffalo goes for it on the first drive. They get a 4th down for a chip shot field goal. They go for it again and get the touchdown. They said, we've got to score 7s to beat Patrick Mahomes. We've got to keep possession of the ball and limit how many times he touches the ball to beat Patrick Mahomes. Then on the kickoff, they said, well, we want to make sure that, you know, we don't have a run back, right? They went counter to what their overall philosophy was, which was do everything you can to hinder Patrick Mahomes. We have to win this by limiting how much Patrick Mahomes can beat us, and then they gave him the best opportunity to succeed, which is amazing. It just shows how hard it is for these coaches to go for these 4th and 1s and 4th and 3s and the Chargers 4th and 9s. I mean, they're doing it, but they're holding their nose as they're doing it. I mean, they're making themselves do it, and when they have it and they think they can see an alternative path, they take it. And I think what you're going to see is that starting with playing the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, and as quarterbacks like Josh Allen develop, and maybe even Joe Burrow develop, and offensive football becomes as easy as they're making it look, all coaches are going to have to decide that the game is as much about playing defense with your offense as it is playing defense with your defense.
Yeah, and the Bills had a 4th and 1 at their own 30. They were down 3, and they elected the punt. And the Chiefs went down and scored and then went up 2 possessions, and you thought maybe that'd be enough. Of course, at the end, it got wild. And then the other thing, too, of course, and I've had a lot of people ask me about this since the game, and I said, well, thankfully, we're not talking a lot about it, but if the game had gone differently, if the Bills, when they scored 1:54 to go and they got the 2 and the Chiefs had a turnover or didn't score, they lose the game 29-26, the play everybody's going to remember, and I heard you talk about on your show yesterday, is the Blake Bell option play to McKinnon. Which was an interesting time to call that play. But as I tried to tell people, listen, the two easiest things to criticize, officiating, play calling. It's automatic. Officiating, play calling. You can do it every single game in any kind of sport. I'm like, think back to the Chiefs had a 4th and 1 earlier in the game, and a lot of people are probably saying, give it to Burton. Burton never gets stopped. And I'm thinking, don't give it to him because they're going to be ready for it. And it was a great play call, and McKinnon wide open. Mahomes, the ball was still in his hands, flipped it out, McKinnon, great play call. If McKinnon drops that pass or Mahomes, you know, throws it into the ground like he did on a play against the Chargers, you know what people are going to say, don't you? Well, why didn't you run it with Burton? You know? So What about that option call for you? I mean, do you have a big problem with the call at the situation, taking the ball out of Mahomes' hands on a 3rd and 1? Or do you say, hey, you know what? Sometimes you run a play, it just wasn't executed.
Yeah, you know, and that is part of it, right? They're not all gems. And the other side gets paid millions of dollars, too.
Yes.
And so if all you do is ridicule every play call that doesn't work, I know, one, you've never coached anything.
Right.
Because, you know, there are times the other guy gets you, right? You just got to get him more than he gets you. I don't care if that's Little League, you know, basketball or football or if it's an NFL head coach, right? That's the way it works. And, you know, I Curtis and Jed, who work with me on my show, you know, really made that play. They said it's my fault. Because, and I'll take some blame for it, right? Like Andy Reid ever listens to me. But I've been lobbying. I said, well, I don't understand why this whole short yardage package isn't Blake Bell under center. And I've been lobbying for this for 3 years. I thought when they signed him in 2019, Andy Reid, the mad scientist, that's what he had in mind. It's here's my short yardage quarterback, right? I'm going to run Wildcat with this 260-pound tank in the middle who's thrown a football. It's a natural act. He knows how to hand off. You know, he's pitched it. He can do all the things a quarterback does. We just got to knock the rust off him in practice, and this will be our short yardage package. I loved it when they bring him in motion and then put him under center and they have him run the quarterback sneak. What I've complained is get Mahomes off the field and just run it. Get an extra threat as opposed to just a decoy that you're playing 10-on-11 and they have a whole package for this. And I thought that's what this was the evolution. To my chagrin, either the rust has not been kicked off, or we find out why Blake Bell did not finish at quarterback for Oklahoma because he made a brutal decision. I think it's actually a really good play call. And if Blake Bell holds on to the ball and forces the end to commit, then I think it may work. He pitches it out there, and I think they get an easy run. Or he cuts it up, puts his shoulder down, and runs. Instead, long before the end had committed, he pitches it on out to the running back and makes it an easy play to defend. I think the play call was actually good. I think the execution by Blake Bell was terrible. And so, you know, my theory's gone down the toilet. So far be it from me to second-guess Andy Reid. Like, he gave it a shot. He went to the next step. Now, I'll point this out. I do think that maybe that was definitely executed poorly, and Andy Reid has said, you know, every play is called to work, right? There was a bad, like, I don't know, double, triple, reverse thing going on with Tyreek Hill where, you know, Hughes was able to shove him into the backfield, and he lost about 4 yards. That they clearly thought they'd seen something on the misdirection and they would get Buffalo. That didn't work either. But a lot of those things set something else up. So now not only does Blake Bell get under center in motion, you got to be prepared for that. Not only will Blake Bell just take the snap, he'll also come out and run the option. Now you have to prepare for that. All those things are reps that the defense is having to burn time and effort and energy, but mostly time, in being prepared and how to stop. And now they're not working on what is the bread and butter stuff, the main thing. And so there's a residual effect to running that play. Even though it didn't work, it will affect the Cincinnati Bengals, and it will affect whoever, if they get there, they play in the Super Bowl, because they will have to be ready for option football with Blake Bell at quarterback.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on this point, but I do want to bring it up, and that is the overtime debate. And as I responded to some people, where the heck were you in January of 2019? If you were consistent with this, then fine, I have no problems with you. But if you weren't crying about it in 2019 and now you are after the Bills-Chiefs game, I really, you know, I don't lend as much credibility to you. This is how I look at it, and I don't know if you look at it the same way. And I said it then, even though I'm a big Chiefs fan, and you are as well. I said it in January 2019 after that game. I said, you know what? From an entertainment purpose, yes, you want both teams to get the ball in overtime. You don't want to see one guy get it, the other guy doesn't. At the same time, people say, well, the Chiefs didn't have a chance to score in overtime. Well, if Dee Ford isn't offsides, if the Chiefs could actually stop with Bob Sutton's defense, third and multiple third and longs against Brady, okay, you wouldn't have got to overtime. You wouldn't have to worry about it. The Bills, they can scream all they want about overtime, in my opinion. Here's the thing. You had 13 seconds. You were celebrating on the sideline. You thought you had it won, and you gave up 44 yards in 13 seconds. The coin flip didn't decide the game. You decided the game by how poorly or scheme your defense was, letting Kelce and Hill run open down the field to get in field goal range. That's the way I look at it, and I'm being consistent with my argument because I said that in January 2019. As much as I wanted to be a homer and say, well, God dang it, Mahomes should have the ball, and this is a bunch of hogwash, I was like, you know what? The Chiefs had lots of chances to stop Brady, and Brady didn't have third and two every single time, and they just simply didn't get it done.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And they had a defense that was inept and didn't stop anybody all throughout. They had a safety that didn't really have his heart in playing the game, that came back late and couldn't handle Rob Gronkowski, even though he was one of the highest paid guys on the team. You know, they lost that game because the New England Patriots were a better team, better organization that day. And to Andy Reid's credit, that's how he viewed it. Now, they proposed the overtime.
Yes.
And he said, you know, listen, the reason we want to do this and give each team possession in the half, regardless of what happens, is because we think it's good for the game. And to Andy Reid's credit, he said, listen, I'm glad they didn't change it on Sunday, but I still think it's bad for the game.
Yeah.
He said, I think, you know, the fans were robbed of watching Josh Allen try to have a chance to answer. He said, I think we need to do what's best for the good of the game. I think Andy Reid is an offensive coach, and he wants his shot. And I think he knows that, you know, he's always – that's going to be better for him in the long run.
Yes.
You know, and so – that's his mindset. The bottom line is this: you can change the rules. There should be no venom or anger or calling the rules stupid. The rule is the rule, and everybody knew it when they lined up to play the game that day. And you have to manage your game based upon what the rules are right then, and not what they could be somewhere down the road. I'm with you. There's no reason for sour grapes. The Chiefs died by the sword in January of 19. They lived by it in January of 22.
Yeah, now hopefully they don't die by it again come this Sunday if the Bengals go to overtime and win a coin flip and go down the field and score. Let's talk about the Bengals game. Tyrann Mathieu, concussion. Rashad Fenton's been out the last couple of games, and you're going to need all hands on deck against the Bengals offense. This game worries me quite a bit for many reasons. One, they have the firepower to match the Chiefs' firepower. They have more weapons than anybody I think they've seen all year long with the wideouts. They do have a capable running back. Their offensive line obviously is questionable. that's been a problem since Burrow's been there. Their defense has improved, although I don't think it's lights out, obviously. The Bills is probably better. But it concerns me when I know Joe Burrow, watching him in college, and when he became out of the came out for the draft, there was some debate, should he be the number one pick? I was like, dude, this guy's the real deal. This guy's the real deal. He is Joe Cool. And I know one thing for sure, at least I think I do. On Sunday, when the Bengals come to Arrowhead, Seren, Joe Burrow will not get rattled. He will not get flustered, I don't think. I don't care if he gets sacked 12 times and throws three picks. He is going to have the mindset like Mahomes, and guys respect him. My question would be, what about his teammates? Will they blink when things go bad, if they go bad at any point in this game, whereas the Chiefs have been there, done that?
Yeah, I think, listen, the 7.5 number, I think, is a key one. It shows a lot of confidence in the Chiefs. And I look back at that game, and that game is, there are a lot of things not to like, right? But I think there are a lot of things that were 50-50s that went Cincinnati's way. Yeah. I also don't know that the Chiefs, even though they should have been, they were a couple of games away from being the number one seed. That carrot should have been enough to have them bring their full energy and emotion. I don't think it was there. I think you saw a team that got back to the number one seed and exhaled. You know, we talk about it in basketball. You know, it's one thing to come back. You almost have to, you come back from 16 points down, you almost need to take the lead with 2 seconds to go, because there's a natural tendency to say, okay, we're here. We got it done. We're back even. Now we're okay. You see a lot of times a team comes back, gets it tied with 2.5 to go, then they end up losing by 7 because they spent so much energy and there's a bit of a letdown. And I think that was kind of what happened in the season for the Chiefs. You know, they had the run it back theme. I think they were motivated by it. That carried them forward. There was no theme this year. It was just go out and be good again. And I think the first 7 games, they had a lot of self-inflicted wounds because they weren't as sharp as they should be, because they knew that their season was going to be measured by what happens in the playoffs, not in the regular season. And so I think it took them getting their backs against the wall and realizing, wait a minute, 3-4, almost half the season's gone. Like, we got to go, man. Yeah. We got to make this happen. They fight all the way back to getting to the one seed, and I think there was just a natural letdown in that game. And they still led by 14 points on 3 different occasions. They still had to have a guy, Jamar Chase, who's battle drops all year, play near-perfect football, and win numerous 50-50 balls. One of them that went off Charvarius Ward's hand. I mean, he had perfect, you know, coverage, and it hits him right in the palm of the hand, then just rolls over the top of his hand and into Jamar Chase's hand. I mean, you know, if Cincinnati looks at that game and says, all day, baby, we were nails, that's exactly how we want to play, they're fooling themselves. I also don't know how many times you can give up 9 sacks. The Chiefs aren't good enough to get 9 on Joe Burrow. No. But they got 4 last time. And if you pressure a guy like that, he can't keep going without turning the ball over. There will be a fumble, a sack strip. There will be a ball that his arm is hit while he's throwing, and it goes up into the air and it gets intercepted. They're living on borrowed time as far as the turnovers come with how much their quarterback gets hit. Not to mention just having him knocked out of the game. And I don't know who the hell the Bengals' backup quarterback is, as I sit here, but I know he's not Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot. Listen, the O-line's an issue. Their secondary really isn't that good. I think the Chiefs are hot now. Patrick Mahomes and this team are focused. And I think the spread is there for a reason. I think the Chiefs win. I think they cover. I think the question is, do they become, I think they would be the first team to score 40 points in 3 playoff games en route to the Super Bowl. I think that they will keep things humming along. And this one, instead of being close, will be the Chiefs by a wide margin. They may give up. It may be 42-31, but I think the Chiefs are definitely getting into the 30s, and I think Joe Burrow is going to have another day where he's looking at bruises at the end of the game.
I don't want to bring up sour grapes, Seren, but I remember last time you were really confident about the Chiefs winning is when we had you on before the Super Bowl last year, and that didn't turn out so well. So I'm hoping this one's a little bit better.
Yeah, I am too. Trust me, I remember that. You know, I will say this. The lesson I learned on that is the tackles matter.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And if we're wrong, then someone's going to have a day because they exploit Andrew Wiley over on the right side.
Yeah.
But 4 out of 5 along that Chiefs offensive line are legit. And Patrick Mahomes knows how they block now. He's in sync with how they block. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of reason to believe that, you know, a day like that, it's not that they can't lose. They can. We saw it against the Bengals. And maybe that's the best thing that happened for this team, was they got the reminder that, yes, even when we're all out there, we can lose. And now they're focused and won't have that kind of game. But keeping the quarterback upright is vitally important, and the Bengals will learn that lesson on Sunday in Arrowhead.
Bengals backup quarterback is Brandon Allen, by the way. Real quick before
shivers down my spine.
I know you're scared about that. Before we get to off the wall and let you go here, Tyrann Mathieu, what do we know about him? And, I mean, you think about this game coming up on Sunday. We saw that there was some either busted coverages or we just saw some wide open. Well, Gabriel Davis was wide open. Let's just put it that way. Multiple times against with the Bills and with the wideouts that the Bengals have, to me, they have a more talented, a younger, more athletic wide receiver group. What about Mathieu and his status and how important he is to the game on Sunday?
Listen, I have no inside information. We won't know anything until the practice report comes out on Wednesday. We'll get our first indicator. And even if he doesn't practice in, it doesn't mean he can't clear the protocols and play in the game. Just based on how quick he was up and moving around, how he didn't lose consciousness seemingly on the field, I'm of the opinion he will play. You know, the hit didn't look that strong, but the brain is an odd thing. And I think it is dangerous when you get hit from behind. I think sometimes that can be worse than people realize, be worse than it looks. I'm optimistic, but I certainly don't have any definitive knowledge of it. I will say this, if they know going into the game that he's not going to play, there'll be a different and better game plan than the one that they had to go ahead and play against Buffalo that was put together thinking he was going to be out there.
Yeah, there'll probably be a plan A and a plan B. I get that. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you, Saran. When things get grim, be the Grim Reaper, is what Andy Reid said to Patrick Mahomes before he went on the field with 13 seconds left. What's the best quote or analogy you've ever heard from a sports participant, whether it be a coach, maybe even your own kids, your wife, maybe it's a player, who knows, any level. What can you think of a really good quote or analogy that you heard that you're like, wow, that was good, or it's funny, made you laugh, whatever?
Two quick ones. One, I sat in the office of a personnel guy of the Kansas City Chiefs talking about the late Junior Seavey, God rest his soul, as he passed away recently and had a troubled existence. So certainly thoughts and prayers to him. But Junior Seavey, big 350-pound defensive tackle the Chiefs took in the second round, was slow getting off the ball, and I was sitting there talking about what the team had to look at what they were going to do in the draft. And I said, Junior Seavey, is it me or is he, like, really slow getting off the ball? And the personnel guy leaned back in his chair, crossed his legs, put him up on the desk, put his feet up on the desk, crossed him over, put his hands behind his head, leaned way back in the chair and said to me, he's not sudden. And that, to me, has always struck, and it's something we use on the show today, is calling slow people not sudden. Nice. I thought that was the greatest way of trying to be politically correct and saying a guy is really slow getting off the ball. And then I was told this by someone who was in the clubhouse to see it, Buddy Bell, ends up in an altercation with Ronelvis Hernandez, the Royals pitcher, wrestling around on the ground. It came to blows, and they're separated, and Buddy Bell stands up after the fight, points his finger in the direction of Ronelvis Hernandez and yells at him, Ronelvis, you're not good enough to be an a-hole. And that's always stuck with me as well. You can be an a-hole, but you better be really good if you're going to be an a-hole.
Wow.
Otherwise, they're going to get rid of you.
That's funny. I like that one. I'm going to hold on to that one. That's really, really good. All right, man. Before you go get your haircut, how can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, at Soren Petro, SorenPetro. And if you like Chiefs or NFL, me, Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus, and Jeff Chidea from the NFL Network do our Red, Gold, and Bold podcast. We stream it live Tuesday nights at 9, and our Two Deep NFL podcast Thursdays at 9. Just look for it wherever you get your podcast, man.
As always, appreciate the time. Thanks, man, and enjoy the game on Sunday.
Likewise, buddy. Take care of yourself.
That's Soren Petro, best in the business, 810 WHB, Kansas City, host of the program, weekdays 2 to 6 o'clock here on The Ticket today.